welcome to PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. Happy Pride. We're still Pride Month.
Happy Pride, everyone.
I'm here with my good friend of yours, Mr. Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
Were you introduced in the last episode?
No, but it's okay.
Ah, they'll figure
you read
out.
The description, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're doing a fully now. A full throbbing episode.
Yeah, I was just going to say fully erect episode.
Fully erect episode. First of all, let me ask you, Anthony, how you been?
I've been good. Feeling the good vibes with the weather changing and summer's approaching.
Do you like it hot?
Hot? No. But I like the spring and summer very much.
For me, I run a little hot.
Yeah, I mean, physically,
so,
yeah.
So, like, 55 to, like, 70 is the tops I'll go.
Oh, no, I like...
More than 70, I'm like, ah. I mean, I could stand to 75.
Yeah, 75.
Anything over that is...
55 is too cold.
I love a chilly...
Once I see a 6 or higher, I'm
a
like,
day oh, that's sunny but has a chill, that's... Mwah, that's what I need. That's what I love.
In the spring. Not in the fall, though. For me.
Okay.
Because a little bit of a chill. People, like, really just simp for fall.
Well, fall, I don't know. Sophisticates and intellects. You know, the fall... Yeah, yeah. I think it's like if you're a night owl or a day person. The fall and the winter are the night of the year.
Yeah. But I'm a night person, but I hate fall. I hate winter.
Winter sucks.
Winter is
I should say I'm only happy horrible. About 2 or 3 weeks out of the year.
Yeah, obviously. But that's a given. Fall, what I don't like about the chill in fall is that it's a harbinger of what's to come. Which is the long, dark night of the soul, which is winter. So I'm like, it's coming.
It's interesting you say harbinger, because one of the trailers we're going to look at in Trailer Corner has a harbinger in it.
It does.
What a connection. You don't hear the word harbinger as much as you should.
Only pretentious people say it, so that's why I said it.
Fair enough.
I think it's like just feels really nice when it's like 8 o'clock and it's still light out.
Okay, I see what you mean.
It feels like there's more life
packed
into every day.
Sure.
Then in the winter when it's like, you're done by 3 p.m., babe.
Yeah, I love that, though. I love it. Let's all go inside. Let's all go inside. All right. Well, we're very different people, and that's okay.
We are.
So let's go to Trailer Corner. We have 4 trailers we're looking at today. Let's start with the one that has a harbinger in it.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm most excited about. Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma.
So this is an interesting choice for Hannah Einbinder.
But isn't she full of interesting choices?
She is. What do you think of her stand-up?
I loved her special. But I do acknowledge that it is
more... It's like alt comedy.
It's more performance art.
Yeah.
But I loved her special. I loved it. I love her.
I liked it too. I think it took me a minute to adjust because I was expecting her to be funny the way Ava is funny.
No, she's not.
But she's not.
Yeah,
I think she has that in her, but it's not her performance style.
No. She has more, like, confidence in herself.
Yeah.
Like, but, like, in a funny way. Like, confident in something stupid. So this is by the filmmaker Jane Schoenbrunn, who did, what do you call it? I Saw the TV Glow, another episode of PCMC. Mm-hmm. Look back. Me and Nadia did it. Have you seen I Saw the TV Glow?
No.
So this director's really great. They are a queer person, and they this is not a horror movie. Like it's. I'm working on this theory, which is like what they do is not pastiche as much as like drag. It's like drag. It's like a movie dragging as another genre.
Okay.
But then there's also like a lot of like interesting like metatextual stuff. Like this movie, the story is basically. That Hannah Einbinder is a young filmmaker who has been tasked with rebooting a horror movie franchise, which is very clearly modeled on Friday the 13th.
Right, yeah.
Even like...
Down to
the VHS boxes, down to the video game that looks like the video game. Which is something they did a lot in... I saw the TV Glow. The show within a show in that is kind of an amalgam of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Power Rangers. And then Pete and Pete are in that movie as a cameo. Like, it's very crazy.
As Pete and Pete?
No, they're just there.
Okay.
It's so weird. It's so hard. It's hard to explain if you haven't seen it. And I get a feeling from this trailer, that this protagonist is much like the protagonist in I Saw TV Glow, which is someone who's queer but having a hard time expressing it and finding their way in that. In this trailer, Hannah says, like, sex seems so easy for other people, but it's never been easy for me.
Yeah.
But it seems like she finds her sexuality through this making. So Gillian Anderson, and who what a...
What? Ugh, range.
I know. I really didn't see this for her. She She almost has a Norma Desmond thing to her.
Yeah.
She plays the actress who was the original Final Girl in the original movie. So she's going to visit her, I guess, as preparation for rebooting it. Maybe it's supposed to be like a Lego sequel or something. And there are clips in the trailer of like the movie within the movie of like a young her, like who's finding her sexuality in the film. And you see a scene with the Harbinger in that, and then Hannah walks into a video store and the Harbinger is there, but he's like, he looks like VHS. Like, it's always like the media coming out and stuff like that in this movie. And the killer is named Little Death. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
And Little Death has a head that looks like a film the front of a film projector.
Yes.
So it looks like everything starts to bleed together, the movie and reality and sex and death. She seems to get into a sexual relationship with Gillian Anderson. At the end of the film, and I think this is also the poster, they're both like half naked, covered in blood, walking, holding hands. Yes. I'm just super into it. It's a queer thing, but it's also part of this bigger thing that's happening that I like, which is called Analog Horror, which really started in YouTube. And it's a movie that just came out yesterday, Back Rooms and Skinamarink. And this playing with VHS aesthetics and analog aesthetics.
Did that start with the movie VHS? Or like?
Yeah, I think so. I might say that. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And so that's a lot in this. It just looks amazing.
When you say Harbinger, what are you referring to?
So a Harbinger is a specific character type in a horror movie. They're the one who goes, oh, don't go out to that camp.
So I know, but you said we see a Harbinger.
So you see a guy in the trailer who, I forget the name of this actor. He's in a lot of David Lynch movies. You see him in the old film and he's saying, don't go up there. But then there's another scene where Hannah walks into a video store and he's there.
I didn't realize
But it's
that
him was... from the movie. So it's like he's out of the movie in the whatever.
That I distinctly remember, like, that character in the original Friday the 13th.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Crazy Carl, whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in, like, a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was... Yeah, if you ever listen to Gorley and Russ, they talk a lot about him.
So I was saying this before we started recording, but this doesn't... It hints at the plot, doesn't give us much...
And there probably isn't a lot of plot when we get into it. It's probably going to be vibey.
Well, a lot of the trailers, with the exception of one for today, feel like they are more vibey than anything. And I think trailer making as an art, like it's trending toward being, I said before, like a vibe poem.
Yeah.
They're thought poems.
That's good.
I think so. It's less like giving anything away.
It's also hard to sell, like... So how do you sell a movie like
this? They're eliciting a feeling and then saying, like, if you want more of that feeling, come see this movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which I think they did with Long Legs. Like, I remember watching the trailer for Long Legs being like, who shot who? What now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what this is, but there's some interesting images in it.
Right, right. That's what ends up happening, which is like, here is a selection of odd imagery.
Yeah.
And a feeling often elicited by a song.
Right.
And it's like, you're right. Yeah. Like, you're buying this feeling. You want to sit in this for a while? This is the movie for you.
The one thing that they need to stop doing, in my view, because it's so played out, is doing the, like, remix of a song.
I know, but it works for me every time.
It does work, but it's...
But it can't not work. It's
getting so formulaic.
It's scientifically designed to work.
Right.
The last one that really got me was in the Supergirl trailer... They remix What Becomes of the Brokenhearted.
Right, yeah.
But, like...
They make it like, work sci-fi-y with the score. Yeah.
And it's, like, reflecting Supergirl's pain over losing Krypton and her dog.
Yeah.
I
don't know who started it, but two early ones that come to mind for that were Hooked on a Feeling in the Guardians trailer. I feel like that was an early one. and the five on it in the Us trailer.
Ooh. I think of the one of the early ones that stuck out to me was in the first Suicide Squad.
Oh,
there's a Queen song. Yes,
a Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Yes, that is an even earlier one. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which made that movie look so much better than it really was.
Right, right, right.
Because who fucking doesn't love Bohemian Rhapsody?
Who doesn't like Queen? Like, right. You like Queen. That's the thing that's so tricky about it, yeah. Right? Because it's like, we know you like, they're giving us something that we like.
Right, right.
And then there's often a question of, is this actually in the film or not? Sometimes it isn't.
Sometimes it isn't. I like better when it is, though. Like, Five on It is part of Us, even though I don't love that movie.
Yeah.
Right,
and they also talk about it.
And Hooked on a Feeling is on his sound, his, you know, one of his mixtapes.
Right. And James Gunn is a big needle drop, put songs in movies guy. So yeah. I think he's a big force behind this. It's funny, another trend that you see a lot, and the two that come to my mind is He-Man that's coming out this week and Superman from last year, is taking an original score from the past that you like and reworking into a new score that's a new score with a new feeling, yet it's got enough of the notes from the old one that you're like, it hits your nostalgia.
Yeah.
Like, have you heard the theme to the new Superman?
Yeah.
It's got the dun-dun-na-na-na, yeah. But it's not that.
Right.
It's only just got like little tendrils of John Williams in it, but enough that you're like, ooh, it's Superman. It's really interesting.
You know, it's a good one, even though better than the movie. We can do a whole episode on trailers that are better than the movie, yeah. By the way. In the 2018 trailer for the 2018 Halloween.
Yes.
They did like pieces of the
do-do-do-do. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do-do-do. And it like built from there.
Yes.
That was good.
I'm going to add that idea to the idea list. Trailers
put
that
in the idea machine.
Than the movie.
I think they
but did you also make the argument that every trailer is better than every movie.
Yeah, I think they did it in the Exorcist trailer too. Like a little bit of the tubular bells, just like a little at a time.
Where are you? I'm going to take a temperature check. How are your feelings, hopes, fears about the new Mike Flanagan Exorcist?
I'm sure it look,
it's got to be better.
It can't be worse.
Yeah.
Look, it could be good, but it seems like it's just. And it's an entirely new story with the Exorcist branding.
So which it's is like, probably...
Are we now making the Exorcist an anthology franchise?
That's a better thing. Which, I like the Exorcist show, and that's what they did.
Sure, but Reagan showed up.
In season one.
Yeah, okay, not in season one. Okay. I mean, listen, if it's good, I'll like it. I'm willing to see it. I'm interested... I guess I know the answer to this. Why not just name it something else? Because the property is what brings in the IP is what
that's
brings
the in only the point.
Yeah,
The last one was so bad.
It was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Forget Exorcist movies.
And worse than his Halloween movies that I also think are worse. Bad.
It's actually, I remember sitting there watching thinking like, I'm actually like offended that this was pushed down my throat as a direct sequel to the original Exorcist. Because this is such a pale imitation of the
Exorcist. It also feels like
it has nothing totally in common with the original.
I wouldn't be surprised if you told me like whoever made this actually never saw The Exorcist.
It was fucking awful. It's so what they did to Chris McNeil's character. I mean, Chris McNeil's character had a better arc in the show.
Yeah. Yes.
And Reagan.
Yeah.
Than in this.
Yeah.
What a shitty movie.
And I like that Ellen Burstyn was like, I did it entirely for money and I gave it all to charity.
Yeah. And she's like, and I will film in one day.
Yeah.
And you will work around my schedule.
Yeah. And that'll be it.
Talk about, she was phoning, she was texting it in.
Yeah.
Forget phoning it
in. Yeah, 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 yeah.
She was like, despite the fact that I'm acting right now, I am still retired at this moment.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this.
Yeah, I am barely here.
And also, she got her eyes stabbed out. What a fucking horrible thing.
It was so stupid. Look, I'm an atheist. But if you're going to do the Exorcist right, it has to be Catholicism or Christianity.
This thing of like the Avengers of Exorcists, where it's like we need a
witch doctor.
A shaman.
It's like, a rabbi. And it's like, dude.
It's going to take everything we've got.
It feels like answering a problem that no one was calling this problematic and you're answering it before anyone had a problem with it.
Also, I think it boldly, here's a hot take. I think it boldly stole from My Best Friend's Exorcism.
Yes.
The plot line of the two girls go missing for 48 hours and they show up acting a little bit differently.
Yes.
That was from My Best Friend's Exorcism.
Yeah.
right down to like where they ended up in like an abandoned area.
Yeah, that's so true. Wow, yeah. Makes There's no a sense. Movie of that. It was made for...
Sucked.
TV. Oh, you didn't like it?
I hated it. Yeah.
I liked it, really it not as much as the film. Not as much as the book. There's yet to be... I think that's the only Grady Hendrix movie. There's yet... Somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to make a good one at some point.
I hope so. Or make a series.
Yeah. All right, let's... all right, since we're talking about horror, let's talk about Resident Evil.
What do you make of this?
So, this is directed by Zach... Kreger.
I learned in my research this is like the fourth reboot of Resident Evil.
What do you mean by reboot?
So there was the original 2003 movie.
Yeah.
Or 2002 movie.
Yeah.
Then there was a reboot in 2015.
There was? I don't remember that.
That was like really shitty and panned.
Oh, I don't remember
widely.
That.
Then there was a Netflix show.
There that was?
That got canceled. And now this is attempt four.
Wow. Okay. So this is all news to me.
Yeah, the reboot in 2015 was Welcome to Raccoon City.
Oh, shit. Now I remember. Okay. So, look. I think Barbarian is good. It's fine. And I thought Weapons was good.
Oscar nominated and winning Weapons.
It's good. It's a strong good. I don't know. Look, I'm glad.
I agree with you. I don't think Weapons is, like, as brilliant as people say it
No,
is.
I it blows my mind.
And people I think her performance is incredible. She elevates it.
Oh, Madigan? Yeah.
Madigan. I think the comparisons and the parallels between her and Ruth Gordon and Rosemary's Baby are often made and I think appropriate.
Yeah.
That like this really great actress came in and elevated the whole thing. But I think that Rosemary's Baby is a way better movie than Weapons is.
On Oscar night, Emilio texts me, did Shanice Kobolowski just win an Oscar?
She'll always be Shanice to me.
Yeah. All right. So, look, I'm happy that Horace is having a good moment, but and Sinners is good, but he's an overrated director. His movies are overrated. His movies are all good. They're just overrated. So whatever. The weird thing about this is like you had a long series of Resident Evil movies that were all like weird action-y movies that people felt like didn't reflect the games, and now there's this which looks scary and weird and interesting and kind of plays like a short film, like it's almost like one scene. But at the same time, people are like, okay, great, but like this also doesn't... Like, can't we just do a fucking zombie movie? There's not a single zombie in this trailer.
No, when I watched this trailer, having probably way less knowledge of the franchise than you do, I was like, this feels like a regurgitation of the original Evil Dead, like the last act of Evil Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like there's some unnamed force...
Right.
That's trying to get at him. And then I was like, is he the only character in this movie?
I don't know, man. I don't know. It a lot of people saying it also feels more like the video game Silent Hill than Resident Evil. I don't know.
In Japan, it was not called Resident Evil. It was called Biohazard.
Was it?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. How is this? Is this even like in the world of the video game?
I mean, there's like a lot of games, and some of them are in the past, some are in the future. It's more Resident Evil is more like a vibe. Seeing if the vibe...
I didn't get excited for it.
No.
It seemed like they were trying to, like, be like, this is good now. We got a good guy.
Right, yes, exactly.
That was the trailer was basically screaming that. Like, Weapons, remember?
Yeah. I did like the image of, like, the Rat King monster of, like, there's a door and then, like, legs come out, then, like, weird more legs come out.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, not much to say.
We can move on.
Let's go to... Should we go to the one that we're both itching to talk about?
Yeah.
Tony.
So, here's... All right, so it doesn't look like it's breaking any kind of mold with biopics.
It looks...
Other than the fact that it's a subject that's not the most iconic person.
It looks to me... I think it will be good. I think it can be good.
Yeah.
But it looks a lot like, what if we did a biopic on Anthony Bourdain but made it The Bear?
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting...
That's how it felt to me. Like, oh, this is very Bear influenced.
Or like
a punk rock chef.
Yes. Which was his whole vibe, right?
Yeah.
I also was thinking, and I haven't seen this movie, but I also was thinking about that... Timothy Chalamet, Bob Dylan movie. That was like, let's show how shitty this person is.
The trailer, I think it looks like it could be good, but the fact that the last thing is like Anthony
that Bourdain. Was so
and then cuts to the title card Tony. I was like, well, he just said Anthony.
Yeah. Right.
Like, you made a whole thing of it.
Yeah. That was so corny. Like, we knew what it was. You didn't need to. They were like dropping like a hammer. Yeah, like, we fucking got it.
Listen, bro. I'm not a huge Bourdain fan, but don't know really that much about him. But I hope, I'm sure they won't. But I'd love to see them delve into. I mean, he died of suicide.
Yeah.
Right. So, are we going to get to that?
This looks like young him. This is so no. Bourdain Begins.
I mean. I don't know. It looked like bio. It looked. You know what else it did? Speaking of Chef, not Chef, the bear.
Yeah.
It really gave me a lot of vibes of like that Jeremy Allen White, Bruce Springsteen movie.
Too, oh yeah, yes, which yes.
Also was good.
I didn't see it.
Lowercase G, good.
Yeah.
But like, was only about the making of like one album, really. And
right.
Things with, I mean, for better or for worse, we're in this, everything follows trends, right? And like the trends right now, biopics, is they focus on only short periods of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the biopic as a, I don't even want to call it a genre. It's
as
more,
a form.
Yeah.
It's tired.
It's inherently limited.
Yeah.
So all you could do is put like.
Make shit up.
Or you could like, you could put little bells and whistles on it. Like, you know. The what do you call it? The Elton John one was like, put a lot of magical realism in it.
I like that one.
I liked it too, but.
I like that it did something different, which was made it a musical where.
But they're not the first to do that.
No, they're not. But it was like a Broadway style jukebox musical made into a movie.
Right, right. I'm excited because Stavi Baby, Stavros Halkias, is one of the cooks in it. I love him.
And Antonio Banderas.
As the sexy older
hot
chef.
He's never looked better.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to see it. It looks interesting.
Sure.
When I heard Tony and I was like, what's this about? And then I watched it and I was like, no. Is it really?
He wasn't like, the whole time you're like, could it be? It's very Jersey too.
What if it were actually about Danza? At the end, it's like, let me tell you who the boss is.
Oh my god.
I'm the boss.
What a hottie.
I
this is not a movie I'm gonna go see.
You know, it depends on what kind of weekend it is. Stuff.
I don't think I'd go see this. I would...
For now. I mean, I go see stuff, but we're thinking of me and the missus are very seriously considering
the Alamo.
Well, we're seriously considering only going for repertory showings and seeing new releases elsewhere.
Where are you going to go, though? AMC? Or Atrium, baby.
Support Atrium, small businesses. Atrium, and we like Regal Bricktown here in Staten Island.
Regal Bricktown?
By the new library.
That's where we saw Scream.
Yes, yes. Yeah. No, we saw Scream at Alamo.
No, Scream 5.
Oh. Okay, yeah. Yeah, you're right, yeah. So, you know, we do see enough movies that we need to be members somewhere.
Yeah.
But Alamo just literally...
You don't want to be an AMC Stubbs member, because fuck them too.
Why? What's
they took away the menu.
Oh, yeah. Everything sucks. But the problem with Alamo is it's a bummer now. Like, something that you love so much, and now it's like, everything's bad about it, everybody's sad.
Yeah, the last time I went with you, I felt like the vibes were off.
I remember... Like, last time I went, they had, they were selling Mandalorian Grogu pint glasses, which is what they do. And I do this thing where it's like, you gotta earn it for me. Like, I don't buy it beforehand.
Right.
Like, I have the Ghostbusters one, I got after it. So, I like Mandalorian Grogu, so I was like, okay, let me get a pint glass. I saw a big old pile of pint glasses. So, I went up to the girl, the thing, and I was like, oh, can I get a pint glass? And she's like, no, those are only for pre-orders. And I was like, oh, yeah, right. I forgot your new motto is we don't go above and beyond.
What did she say?
No, I didn't say that to her.
I was going to say that.
I did have a little something with her because I was like, because what we do now is to not use the app, we order at the counter food. And one time I was able to use my card. So I was like, and she was like, I only take cash here. If you have card, use the app. And I was like, but I used my card last time, which I know is something they hate when you say, but it is the truth. Like, the very last time I was there, I used my card. So it is possible. And then she was like, well, that must have been some sort of special occasion. And I was like, okay. So, you know, I don't like to have Karen moments. It just, but it sucks when it's like, this used to be awesome. I know I sound like an old man, but I'm also talking about like 1 year ago.
Yeah.
Like, this used to be awesome. Like, now, you've still got the aesthetics that are cool, but it's like, your menu's bad.
Feels empty.
You're gonna, there's none of that magic of the people.
They still do like the parties. The food is not as good.
Yeah.
Okay.
The food's not as good and it'll come out bad. Like, it's just everything's, every aspect of it is worse. And it's just such an incredible bummer. And I'm just sick of being bummed out. So we might, actually, we're going to see He-Man twice next week. And the first time we're seeing it is at AMC. Huh. We're only going to Alamo because Alamo's doing a special Saturday morning cereal.
Oh, that's fun.
Thing, Saturday morning cereal, where I guess they're going to give you cereal, and we'll see if that's fun. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we might move over.
Last time I went to Alamo was with you to see Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2.
Yes.
And then the time before that might have been the Super Mario Galaxy movie. And that was fun, but that's because it was a packed house full of children.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah.
It's always a fun vibe.
Yeah.
All right, so the last film we're looking at is Wildwood. This is from Leica, who did Paranorman and Coraline.
Yeah.
So it's a stop-motion animated film. We were both saying that we don't know what this is about,
no
really.
No fucking clue what's happening here.
I'm happy
it exists, because fuck AI.
Yeah, I learned from IMDb that it's about a brother and sister that find a magical world in the woods or whatever.
I got that kind of vibe.
Yeah. But some animals in clothes at some point.
Yeah, there's a lot. And then I heard something. Yeah, for a minute there was something about searching for a brother.
Yeah.
Or something. When you first said this to me and I saw the title, I was like, is this going to be about Wildwood, New Jersey?
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, this is going to be fun.
Down by the boardwalk.
Down by the boardwalk. We did a lot of vacations there growing up, but it is not that.
It is not that at all.
I mean, I can't tell you what's going on here, but it looks good. It looks, like, I mean, it looks, visually looks good.
Similar to Camp Miasma, it's just, here's a bunch of
images and music.
And a song, and a very, like, melodic, melancholic song.
But also, like, a very, like, felt like a throwback, like a very, like, millennial 2010s.
Yeah,
like the Where the Wild Things Are trailer.
Yeah, it seems like it's for kids, but not, like, super sunny.
No.
It looks like it's going to have a sadness to it.
You were just talking about this with Janine that, with Nadia, that there's, like, a melancholy to childhood.
Yeah.
And it's only reflected in a few things.
Yeah.
I think the classic example is the Peanuts.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, like, especially the Halloween special.
Yeah. I mean, it's about disappointment. Christmas, Halloween special is about disappointment.
And the Christmas, Charlie Brown Christmas, too, has a lot of, like, the Christmas time is here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, Christmas time is here, but it's like kind of a downbeat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, being a kid is filled with magic and whimsy, but it's also like, you have no control over yourself.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going on.
You're literally listless.
You have no power.
Yeah.
You have no idea who you are.
Yeah.
You have no idea
how any
of this is going to go.
Yeah.
How this works. You're, for better or worse, you're at the mercy of your parents' whims.
I think there's also a lot of melancholy because there's a lot of boredom. You're not doing a lot.
See, here's another thing, though. That's good. And
I agree.
Kids now are not experiencing the levels of boredom that previous generations did.
Because they have tablets.
And it's killing their imagination.
Yeah.
And they're like, which then will like kill their critical thinking.
Yeah, we're cooked as a species. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this.
But like boredom is very good for you, especially when you're growing up.
Yeah. No, of course it is. Daydreaming is good for you.
Yeah, except when it's maladaptive daydreaming.
And even if it's what's maladaptive daydreaming?
It's like a name for like when you like Walter Mitty, like you day you don't do anything in your life and you just you live only in your fantasies.
Oh, okay. So even boredom's good because the mind's at rest. Like the constant dopamine addiction of scrolling.
The stimuli.
Is killing young people and old people and everybody.
It's killing our imagination, it's killing our attention span, killing our creativity.
Yeah.
We are cooked, as the kids say.
Yeah, we're cooked. But this looks nice.
This does look nice. I like this is tangentially related because a lot of the comments on this were like, I'm so happy to see this because fuck AI.
Yeah.
I'm really digging the growing fuck AI sentiment.
Yes.
That seems to be
bursting
out now. It's kind of like broken through to like now the fuck AI movement is getting just as much attention as AI is getting. Especially like during these commencement speeches.
Incredible. Did you see Conan's where he mentioned it?
Yeah.
It was really good.
Yeah. Because even, look, is it going to make a difference? Probably not. The Comeback Season 3 was a brilliant comment on AI.
I think it can make a difference. Because you got to think about this. It's like, it's really a bubble. It's not this inevitable future. It's like the dot-com
bubble. It's going to burst. Yeah.
None of these things have made money.
Yeah.
They're not money makers. It's going to bust.
Do you believe in that? I guess it's a theory bordering on a conspiracy theory. Uh-huh. But I think maybe there may be parts of it that are actually accurate. That right now we're in the training phase where they're going to get everybody hooked on it. And then they're going to start charging for it now that you depend. Once we become dependent on
I could
it,
see that.
We're going to start charging
I
for it.
I could see that.
I feel like they said that about social media, though, and that never really happened.
No, no. I mean, we pay for it, but in other ways. Not direct payments.
Yeah.
The crazy thing about AI is it's almost like some great sci-fi writer invented it because the idea that it takes water, so it literally not only is it killing our imagination, it rapes our planet. Is amazing. Like, what a perfect poetry.
So,
I think these things are all going to go bust.
I hope so. I love AI slop that people are using that now.
Yes.
And do you know that AI now has a slur?
No.
Clanger.
What's that mean?
It's, I don't know where it came from, but like if you call, it is considered to be the first slur against AI.
Clanger.
If you call it a clanger, which means like you're a machine.
Oh, good. Fuck them.
And you'll, like, I see videos of people being like talking to ChatGPT. You ever see those rage baiting videos where they're like showing ChatGPT not doing what they asked it to do? And then they'll be like, listen, clanger, I told you, count from 1 to 100.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you get the rest.
Yeah.
Anything else I can do for you? And they're like, I am a human being. I am telling you to count to 100.
Well, I also think some of it's real. I mean, the most scary stuff is the images that look like reality.
Yeah, that freaks me out.
But a lot of the other stuff is just, it's just search engines packaging things. Like, it's not real. It's not real AI.
Right.
Some stuff is or close to real AI, but some stuff isn't. Mm-hmm. All of it is stop motion, which is not just real animation, but laborious.
Yeah.
Takes a lot of work to do it. So I'm for it. I'm for this film. I guess let's take a break and come back with the Chosesh. Welcome back to PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. I'm your host, Mike Mangiorno. I'm here with Anthony Mangiorno. Anthony, welcome to the Chill Sesh. This is the Sesh where we chill. I'm going to put my feet up since you no longer want this chair.
Yeah.
Oh.
Those video gaming chairs are, they always look comfortable.
They are nothing more than office chairs.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
They're just fancified office chairs.
Yeah. Something about ergonomics always just felt fake to me. No offense to anyone, you know.
No offense to
anyone in the industry.
To them who celebrates. So what are you chilling with?
I'm chilling with an audiobook.
Oh, yes.
Audiobooks in general have become part of my chill
routine. Where do you listen to
routine,
them?
The car. And sometimes...
On the way to work?
Excuse me. On the way to and from work. Yes. And then sometimes when I'm walking the dog. And then other times, that's mostly it. But I've kind of...
So no podcasts?
I was actually just going to say, I'm kind of getting... I need a break from podcasts. None of the podcasts that I follow or subscribe to are like doing anything for me lately.
Interesting.
I'm finding myself more and more just turning them off. Like this very one we're on right now.
I was going to say, you're on a podcast right now.
I think, you know, I don't know. Just I think the ones I'm listening to are just in a slump. So I've been hanging out with audiobooks.
I think you can get sick of them.
Yeah, I'm sick of...
And then go back,
Yeah, I'll go back. So I'm currently listening to How to Kill a Witch.
What is that?
It's a fun... It's actually not fun. It's fun. It's got darkly humorous elements, but it's also... It's a nonfiction book.
Okay.
I want to pull up the authors right now. So, How to Kill a Witch, the subtitle is The Patriarchy's Guide to Silencing Women.
Okay.
By two very interesting women, Zoe Venditazzi and Claire Mitchell.
Okay.
They are Scottish. It is read by them. This one's taking me a little bit longer to read because they've got pretty thick accents. So sometimes I have to rewind a bit and be like, hold on, I missed that.
Right.
You know, but they founded the Witches of Scotland campaign to advocate for and lobby the Scottish government for pardons mm-hmm. for women who died during the Scottish, women and men, mostly women though, who died during the Scottish witch trials. We're gonna get there. They've secured an apology,
okay,
from the first minister, who I'm assuming is like the president. Yeah. So that's one of their big achievements, because prior to the apology that they got in 2022, the Scottish government had never formally recognized
what they'd done.
And part of what they do as an organization is do research into the lives of all the victims to try to put together cases for them each to get a pardon. And they're also working on, they got the apology. They want there to be a meaningful memorial as well.
Interesting.
Because, and here's the interesting thing, we don't know much about the Scottish witch trials, but also they don't. So part of the book's introduction, I believe, is them talking about how in America, in the States, we all learn about the Salem witch trials
right
in school, and I don't want to say only, but
there's also
only 20 people died and 5 people died in,
there's also places in this country that had witch trials that we don't talk about.
Yeah, of course,
outside of Salem,
right? But to that point, 20 people were killed, 5 people died in prison, so 25 people died. The Scottish witch trials lasted for like 200 years and over like 25,000.
Jesus Christ.
25,000 or 2,500, regardless, a big number of people died. And it's just not part of their culture to talk about it. And it's not part of their curriculum in schools.
Yeah,
so,
wow.
It lasted a long time and they were way, way worse than the Salem witch trials. They kind of go into the history. Very briefly, like some interesting stuff that I've learned, like part of like, vestigial from like the Celts is like for a long time, like the belief in fairies and spirits and stuff like that was just like a part of Scottish culture.
Sure.
And then after the Protestant Reformation, all of that became branded as like the devil's work.
Okay. Yeah.
So then, led by, you know, in large part King James of the King James Bible, right? Who wrote a book called Demonology. Mm. He considered himself to be like an expert on this stuff, and it was like a hobby of his that turned into like a passion to like rid the country of witches. So starting in like the 1500s into like the 1730s, there was like many, many trials.
That's crazy.
And
200
there
years.
Were even professionals who were con artists called witch pickers, who were just guys that were like, I bust witches. That's what I do.
Okay.
And they were paid to come in and be like, oh, I could tell if she's a witch or not. And it would be like, let me strip search her. Does she have a mark? Does she have a mole somewhere? That's the devil's mark.
Of course.
They were all frauds, right?
Right.
But just... This was a huge, miscarriage of justice, where lots of people were killed in horrible ways, usually by strangulation and then burning, or sometimes burned alive. Like, burned at the stake actually didn't happen in Salem. That came from England and Scotland. That essentially what their argument is, the Scottish government has never taken onus for or hadn't, and that it's not like these poor people are not remembered enough. Yeah. This huge injustice against women in particular is just not acknowledged.
So, first of all, that's fascinating.
It's a fascinating listen.
This brings me back to what we were talking about before about The Exorcist, which is whenever they make exorcism movies, whether they're good or bad, they're not about... Exorcism is a real phenomenon that really happens, but we've never depicted it. Other than, like, I've seen one episode of, like, Lore, which is based on the podcast Lore about it, which is exorcisms are a group of men...
torturing someone.
torturing and gaslighting a woman mm-hmm. to steal her property and money. Mm-hmm. That's what exorcism is. Mm-hmm. Always has been, right? Like, you say they're frauds. The difference between a fraud and a not is just you're dumb enough to believe
yep.
it's really there, exactly. or you're just... aware of it, but either way, you're just stealing women's money and gasoline.
What happened with almost all these witch pickers yeah. is that they eventually people turn on them yeah. because they're like, all right, your shtick has gone far enough. Yeah. Now you're accusing my wife. Like, it usually gets to mm-hmm. that point. And then they're like, all right, you're a fraud. And then that person ends up being executed, but only after the damage has already been done.
Interesting.
They also do some interesting things as writers. One of them is a civil rights lawyer. The other one is a writer, but they wrote this together. They weave in first-person accounts that they found. They also weave in fictionalized, like, portrait of the accused, mm-hmm. little vignettes of, like, what an yeah. average, like, what it would be like in the life of this woman.
Yeah.
So it's like a blend, mostly nonfiction, but a blend of some fictionalized.
Because even those who aren't called out, then they are behaving in a way so they won't be called out. So they're right. being... All women are being controlled to behave a certain way.
Yes.
So they won't be called it.
Right. Most of the women who died were unmarried, widowed, elderly. Like, it was the most vulnerable
people
women.
People, you want their land. Yeah. You want
yeah.
their shit.
Yeah. Or you want revenge for something, some kind of perceived wrongdoing. A couple of things. It's a really fascinating reading. One of the interesting things that I think they do a really good job doing is, like, establishing, like, just how oppressive life was for women. And they say this one part where they're talking about, like, the various methods of torture and what was yeah. recognized as torture versus what was not recognized as torture. So, technically, none of the confessions were given under duress. Uh-huh. But according to Scottish law at the time, sleep deprivation was not considered a form of torture.
Sure.
So, like, little things like that, like little loopholes. And one of the things that I think they said, which was interesting, was they spend a decent chunk of it talking about, like, well, why would a woman confess? And then they were like, there's the usual, like, they're being tortured. They feel like it's their only way to stop the pain.
Yeah.
They feel like maybe they'll get a more lenient sentencing if they yeah. confess. And another one that was really interesting was they make this argument that for the time, it was so hard to be a woman that some women maybe just leaned into it. And they were like, you know what? Fuck it. I am yeah. a witch. Be afraid of me. And they were like, maybe they were just
That's
wanted like
a, film, the witch.
A little taste of power yeah. for a minute.
Yeah.
Even though they knew it would lead to their death.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a really fascinating and really like such an indictment on patriarchy.
Have I ever told you how I rewrote what did I rewrite? What's it called?
The Crucible?
Yes, I rewrote it. I didn't rewrite it, but I added a scene to it. So if I ever put it up, which I don't direct plays, I have nothing to do with that. But let's say in some fictional world I do a production of it.
Yeah.
I've added a scene to it.
Okay.
You might say, Mike, do you think you could really do a better job? And the answer is yes. So
is it at the tail end?
No, it's at the very beginning.
Okay.
It's a scene with Proctor.
Oh, yes. I've heard you talk about this.
It's a scene with Proctor and the girl having sex, cuddling, him making promises to her, and just having that will frame the rest of it in a different way where you see he's the bad guy.
Well, okay. So they didn't do that, but there is a play called John Proctor's The Villain mm-hmm. that came out that I saw recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is It's not, it's about, it takes place in a high school classroom where they're reading The Crucible and then they get into like, it's after the Me Too era, they get into like, well, John Proctor is horrible. Yeah. And then the teacher's like, he's one of the greatest heroes in American literature. And then it was, I liked it. It got a little heavy handed at points, but yeah, I think that modern readers, especially like, I've seen this even when I'm teaching it, like, and I think it makes sense. They read it as like, oh, well, he's fucked up. Like, he cheated on his wife.
With a young girl.
With a young girl. Told her he loved her.
Yeah.
And then was like, you tempted me.
Right. Right.
And you're horrible. And you're the villain.
Yeah.
And then so it's like Abigail is the villain.
Right.
When really, like, it could be redone, right?
Yeah.
So that Abigail is not.
Yeah.
I think, you know, really Arthur Miller was probably more interested in critiquing McCarthyism
right,
at the time than actually telling the story. But
no, but yeah, it's just it's he gets a weird pass, and I think it's especially because it's not shown
where he's like, it is my name and all I have left is my name.
Yeah.
And it's like, but your name is worth shit.
Yeah.
Like, you're a bad guy.
You cheated on your wife, sir.
And she's in prison now
right.
because of you.
Right. Right.
At no point does he really take accountability for all that he did.
No, no, no.
And it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't just him, it was also the systems at play, but still.
All right, so moving away from witches for a second, I want to question you on something, and I'm not making a criticism, I'm not saying anything.
Yeah.
Before I heard you say the word read when you talked about it, and okay. I just want to know, I'm not fighting it. I just want to know why you use that word.
I go back and forth between, so earlier I said I read an audiobook. But then just now I said it's a good listen.
Yeah.
I use both kind of interchangeably. Okay. This is like a hot debate in the book community, as you know. Like,
which is kind of meaningless.
And there's like a lot of pseudoscience is introduced where people are like, it's a different part of your brain. So it's not technically reading and it's a different type of comprehension. I don't care enough to.
Right. I don't care about that. I'm just interested in who. Why it interests me is because I see half the people use it and half the people don't. Some people never. Like, when I do an audiobook, I always say listen. Not because I don't think it's reading. In fact, I'm of the, you know, when I taught media, I always made a big point of everything is read. You read.
Yeah, that's.
You read paintings.
You're reading movies.
There's
you're
always
reading
a read. Process is always a reading. So it's always a reading even if you listen to it. But I just, in my language, I tend to always say listen to this book.
Yeah.
You know,
but I
would
think
still
that's
say
because there's still a little bit of like you feel like you're fibbing if you say you read it.
Well, I think because maybe because we've become I was not going to say we've become illiterate. We've always been illiterate. Human beings have always been illiterate. We just had a small shining little moment of literacy. Maybe because we're so less literate now, there's still an achievement involved with reading. Like, hey, I read a book. So
give
you
me a
feel
pizza
like
party.
You feel like it's stolen valor to say
you read
a book.
It, yeah.
I think that's part of it.
Do you notice any difference between...
There is a different experience.
There's a different
experience
for sure, but do you notice a difference in the long term in terms of like retention?
I think I might remember things I listen to more.
I was going to say that. I actually think when I read something, I tend to... I've read so many books where I'm like, well, I read that?
You're
I don't even remember
reading is... And we've had a whole podcast on reading. Go check it out. But it's like a... It's like you're hypnotized. It's a different thing entirely. No, I have no feelings about it. I also think, you know, I have a friend who has ADHD and they were like, this is how I read books. And I'm like, well, yeah.
Right.
They were like, I would love to read a book. I'm not dumb. I just cannot sit and do it.
Yeah.
And even myself, like, I don't know if I have ADHD. I've never been diagnosed with it. I'm diagnosed with OCD and GAD. But before...
With Josh Gad.
Yeah. With Gad disease. Gad fly. Before I was on Prozac, I really was not a big reader. I read more now. Prozac created some space in my mind that I could read more.
This podcast is absolutely sponsored by Prozac.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't... But I do... People read in all sorts of ways, and I think that's fun. I've recently heard of people bringing back communal reading as like a fun activity, which like, hey, they used to do it all the time. That used to be a thing. You'd sit around the Forget the campfire. Like, you'd sit around in your living room.
Me and Jen and do it a lot.
Read aloud to each other. Yeah.
Oh, we don't read aloud to each other. But no, we like reading simultaneously. Oh, yes. Read to each other. Oh, but okay.
Like reading aloud. Like, I'll take this chapter. You take the next chapter. Oh, like a little party.
That's really interesting.
People used to do that. That was like a major pastime.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
So that it all counts. And I have a friend who's like, oh, I'm. Have you heard of read maxing? Well, everything's maxing.
No, what's read maxing now?
Read maxing is listening to the audiobook while you're reading it.
How is that helping?
So it's like you're being like you're in school again, like you're being read to while you're reading it.
See that,
and it becomes a fully immersive experience.
That feels not fun.
I couldn't
to me.
Do it because I feel like it would. I constantly be like my eyes are moving at a different pace than I'm hearing it. And then there's other people who are like, I'm reading it. Okay, I finished chapter 4. Now I'm going on my run. I'm listening to chapter 5. Now I'm home. I'm picking up the book and reading chapter 6.
That's an interesting thing, too. Yeah.
There's no wrong way
to consume a book. No, there isn't. There is not a wrong way.
Except for when you're driving.
Don't read a book while you're driving, folks. Come on now. That's not good.
How often do you listen to an audiobook?
I think once ever.
Oh, really?
No.
I'm an Audible, card-carrying Audible member.
I think very few times. I recently did last year. I listened to Jeanette McCurdy's book while traveling, and I liked it a lot.
Good.
Next
up on my to be listened to, I guess, my TBL pile is Famesick by Lena Dunham. I want to hear her read it. Like, there are some people that I just want to hear them read their book.
I want to know what she, I want to hear her, what she says about Adam Driver.
Not nice things.
Yeah. I tried to listen to Infinite Jest because I couldn't read it.
Nobody's read that book. You know that.
It's a pretend book.
I'm going to die until nobody's read that book.
I bought Nadia a almost like a gag gift. I bought it for their birthday one year and they cut it apart and turned it into like a collage. And I was, I was like, good for you turning Infinite Jest into a work of art.
Yeah. how long is the Infinite Jest audiobook?
I don't know.
It has to be days.
It made
my
phone heavier. No, yeah. It's long.
The fucking Barbara Streisand.
It's about like tennis. Who fuck knows?
Who knows? The Barbara Streisand memoir I have on Audible. It's 48 hours long.
And isn't it like half of her life?
I listened to like the... No, that's Cher. Cher is just the first half, I think. I listened to like the first 4 hours and I was soothed by listening to Babs' voice. And then I was like, all right, I've had enough. I get it.
Wow.
And you became famous.
You know what I've been seeing on Reels? People doing challenges where they read a book in a day.
That's fun.
Have you seen that? I saw one girl read It in a day, which is a long
book. I could not do that.
I read half of It, and that alone is like 600 pages.
Yeah, for real.
And then I was like, I can't take this book anymore.
Every once in a while, I go on a wild hair and I read a book in a day or a book in a night.
It's got to be a... sizable. It's got to be a short book for me to even have a chance in hell.
Pretty short, or like really, really, really good. Which I feel like you only read a book that's like so good you can't put it down.
Rarely,
once a year, you know, if that.
Yeah, and some people never get that experience, which is why I don't think they don't get hooked. You need at least one of those,
so that you're always chasing that high.
Yes.
Again after.
Yeah, you always are like, okay, when you're loving a book, you're always like, okay, what's the next book going to be? I got to keep this rolling.
And then when you're hating a book, you're like, oh, this is forever. Are you a DNF-er?
Do not finish.
Yeah.
I try to finish. There's a point of no return. Like if I get halfway, if I'm hating something at the beginning, I'll be like, I'm giving this 15 more pages to see if it goes anywhere, and then I'll stop. But if I'm halfway through, I'll continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. I'm the same way. Sometimes I like a book, but it's just, I can't get it. I like it when I'm reading it, but I can't get a sense of momentum going.
Yeah, sometimes it's just what you're doing in your life is not conducive to reading.
Yes, I've been listening to this audiobook and also reading a print book for like, since spring break, like 2 months now. And it's just because I've been really busy.
Sometimes you're really tired. I mean, I find the biggest impediment for reading for me
is falling asleep.
Yeah. After a long day of work, you read like a paragraph, page, and then you're like I'm out.
Sometimes, and, how many times in my life I've dropped my Kindle on my face?
Exactly. Yes. So like reading a book a paragraph at a time for 6 months is barely reading.
Yeah.
So
and there's certain books like you can't read, but like before our mom asked if we were going to be talking about the gay hockey show.
Yeah.
Heated rivalry. Like, I can't read that when I'm in bed because it's just going to make me, like, hot and bothered.
Sure, well, sure.
I don't want to read that then.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I'm, like, not really reading it. And the other, it's funny, like, my straight women friends are like, oh, I read it in a night. I'm like, I can't.
Interesting.
It's hitting me different than it's hitting you.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I'm chilling with. And I also read or listened to recently that Scream With Me. That was great.
What was that?
That was the one about, it was feminist reads of horror movies.
Oh, right. I want to read that.
The 70s and 80s. Really good. Really good. And speaking of The Exorcist, had that really interesting read of The Exorcist as being about domestic abuse.
Oh, yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah, I want to read that. Because
it's a house of women, and then an evil force comes in and abuses them sexually, physically, and then keeps them tied to the home.
Wow, yeah. Fascinating. Yeah, I want to read that.
And it's a man who unleashed it.
It is a man who unleashed it. That's really interesting.
I mean, there's a part where in the movie, like, Ellen Burstyn, like, takes off her sunglasses and you see she has a black eye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's like,
In the book, she's like, countless women who are in abusive relationships must have recognized that moment.
Well, that's true.
When they saw that movie.
That's like that sequence from Tales from the Hood with David Alan Greer. Have you seen that movie?
No.
It's Tales from the Hood. It's an anthology. It's like Tales from the Crypt, but all around people of color. And it's this boy, he's like drawing a monster at school, and you find out that it's the father's physically abusive. And it's played by comedian David Alan Greer.
He's great.
But yeah, because he's so scary in it.
Yeah. He's just so good, David Alan Greer.
Yeah, he is. He's
on, what's it called? The St. Dennis Medical.
Yeah.
He's so great.
He was in The New Color Purple, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. He was offered Ace Ventura first.
Really?
And he turned it down because he said the script was really bad.
Huh.
And it was bad, but then Jim Carrey was like, I'm just going to do what I want. And they were like, okay.
Did you ever... I just recently watched a TikTok about the abandoned Incredible Mr. Limpet remake.
Yes, I saw that.
How crazy. Did you see the test footage?
Yeah.
Of like the fish, the CGI fish with Jim Carrey's face?
It looked, yeah.
They were like, if you saw this in the ocean, you would run away screaming, convince the world it was that thing.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
What are you chilling with?
Let's see. So, lots of shows. There's a great show on Apple TV called Margo's Got Money Troubles.
I've heard about
with
this.
With Elle Fanning in it.
She becomes an OnlyFans creator?
Yeah, yeah. And her father is played... Her mother's played by Michelle Pfeiffer. Incredible. Her father's played by Nick Offerman, who's, like, jacked in it. He plays, like, an old WWE wrestler like, now a drug addict, which happens to a lot of them because they have injuries.
So in the show, Michelle Pfeiffer's married to Nick Offerman?
They're divorced.
Divorced, okay.
No, now the mother's getting married to Greg Kinnear, who's like a pastor. It's just really, really interesting, really great character. What's her name? Nicole Kidman's in it as her lawyer, and she's incredible. And she's also an ex-wrestler who became a lawyer.
That's fun.
It's very quirky, but very interesting, very funny. It's very sweet. Elle Fanning is great.
Sounds like, I haven't watched it, but like, OnlyFans, wrestling, being a pastor, it sounds like a lot about like performance.
Yeah, yeah. And her thing is, and I wonder if this is real, by the way, because I don't do OnlyFans. So, but her thing is like, she tries to narrativize it because she wants to be a writer. So like her stuff is, it's still her body, but she like, there's a whole narrative to it. And she like feels like she's making it into art. And when I was watching with Jen, I was like, do you think there's OnlyFans that really do this?
Yeah, I think there are.
There are. Honestly, I don't know. I don't really know anything about OnlyFans. But anyway, that's really good. So Shudder, the streaming network, just acquired all of Tales from the Crypt.
The series?
Yeah. And has been every Friday dropping a season.
Oh, fun.
And,
how many seasons were there?
I think 8. But the crazy thing that I guess, you don't realize if you, I mean, we were kids when it came out, is the incredible star power. It was so, first of all, it was based on an old comic book, but the people who created the show were the director Walter Hill, Robert Zemeckis, who else? A few other big people. And then
was Spielberg involved at all?
No. But then, Every episode is a big director.
There was one with Demi Moore, right? Every
episode is star-studded. Yes, that's one of the best ones.
I remember being really terrified by a shot in that. Is there a part where, like, she's in the shower and there's, like, blood coming out of her mouth or something?
No.
Or am I thinking of... I'm conflating maybe two images.
Probably.
But I remember being, like, really freaked out.
Everyone is star-studded. Because as it got popular, it's just more and more people were doing it. So, like, there's, like...
Danny DeVito was in one, right?
A-list people. Yes.
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger directed one.
Huh.
A lot of actors directed episodes. It's crazy. Like, the amount of stuff you see, it's like, I can't believe... The theme was done by Danny Elfman. It's just...
What a great theme that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Originally composed for... Wasn't originally composed for Death Becomes Her?
No, Death Becomes Her
was going to be a Tales from the Crypt,
going
right?
to be a Tales from the Crypt movie. And I think it should be, actually. I think it would work better as a Tales from the Crypt movie.
Also works way better as a Broadway musical than as
it's way better. The Broadway musical...
I'm so sad it's closing.
The Broadway musical, I loved. Much better. I don't really love the movie that much.
No, the movie's got a cult following. The musical's great.
We could have talked about that last week on queer...
Yes, for sure.
...movies.
Especially the musical.
Yes, yes.
I do it all for the gays.
Yes, yeah. No, that was a great show. So I've been watching that little by little. It's interesting because what I didn't realize as a kid, because you're dumb, is like how extremely moralizing it is. Hmm. It's always, it's extremely formula. It's a bad person does something bad and they get comeuppance.
Yeah.
It's always it. It's very moralizing. The second episode is directed by Robert Zemeckis, and it's a woman kills her husband on Christmas Eve, and then a slasher dressed as Santa Claus tries to break into the house.
Oh, I remember that.
That's a famous... That's such a good... So there's... Some are miss, but some are, like, great. And, so I'm working my way through that slowly, and,
Do you remember... A memory just came flooding back. Memories. Do you remember Tales from the Crypt Keeper?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
I spent a summer reading all of them.
Okay, so I remember Tales from the Crypt Keeper. I read them too, the kids' books.
Kids' books.
But Tales from the Crypt Keeper was an animated series that was like the kiddie version of Tales from the Crypt.
I just remember the books.
I remember the books was a big deal. I think they were like the first books I ever read or something. They were a big deal, yeah.
I remember, talk about being cheated.
Yeah.
I remember spending a summer reading like a bunch of them and putting them on my reading log. And my teacher being like, these don't each count as a book.
How?
I think she thought they were comics.
How dare she?
Yeah, I was incensed.
I would have started a riot. No, it's crazy to look back that this very violent, very sexual show ended up being a huge brand in the 90s.
Yeah.
There was also a game show on Saturday morning based on it was like kids liked it. It was crazy.
Remember Bordello of Blood?
Yes, the second movie.
That was, what was the first one?
Demon Knight.
I don't think I think I only saw Bordello of Blood. Oh, maybe I only saw Demon Knight. We went to see one, I feel like.
Maybe Bordello
or rented it together.
Oh, something. I don't know. So I'm working my way through that.
There's like an 80s Tales from the Crypt movie, right?
No, there's a 70s one. Because the comics are the 50s.
Yeah. Did you ever see the meme of the Crypt Keeper's feet?
No.
He's got like incredibly like meaty, not skeletal feet.
Yeah.
In one shot where he has his feet up.
Yeah.
And then somebody just put on Twitter like, that's it, I've had enough, I'm posting the Crypt Keeper's feet. And then like... It's just like, it just went crazy. A bunch of people bookmarked it, and then people were commenting, like, why are people bookmarking this?
That's hilarious.
Are people going to be gooning to the Crypt Keeper's feet?
Is he on WikiFeet?
I'm sure he probably is.
So that's basically what I'm chilling with. Let's take a break and come back with obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. This is Obsessions, but I was taking a poop in between the break and looking at my phone.
Yeah.
And I was reminded of something going on that bothers me, so I want to talk about it because it's my podcast.
Okay.
This new thing, have you seen this? Now we're not just talking about how much money movies make, but we're talking about tracking how much money we think it will make. And you're seeing these articles... I just saw an article that was like Supergirl on track to make little money failure. And it's like, whoa, it's already a flop. It's not even out for a month.
But haven't they always done like the projected rate?
I don't remember it being reported on the way it's been reported on lately.
Huh. That's interesting.
And it creates a narrative before
whatever
it even...
happened to sleeper hits.
Yeah, well, it creates a narrative before it even comes out.
Yeah, that's weird.
It sucks.
How do they do that? Based on what? Engagement?
I guess.
It's all bullshit. Brother.
It's all bullshit.
What's your obsession?
Oh, I got it right here, Daddy.
Mike is aiming a Polaroid at me. You hear that? He's just taking a Polaroid photo.
Beautiful picture. Beautiful sound, the Polaroid sound.
The picture quality is actually quite shitty. The image is hard.
Well, that's something worth talking
very
about.
Very blurred.
So,
is it because we shake them?
No.
Can you shake them?
No, you shouldn't. Old Polaroids are better than these Polaroids.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen clearer Polaroids.
Right. So, a couple reasons. The technical reason is that there are chemicals in the old ones that are illegal now that you can't have here.
Fun.
But the other reason is, why does Polaroid even exist in our current world when I have a better camera on my phone? It can only exist in a kitsch way like vinyl.
So they make it blurry on purpose?
I don't know if it's on purpose, but the fact that it is blurry and it has a creamier kind of color palette.
Have you ever ripped a Polaroid apart?
Yes.
It's got like a powder inside.
No, it can get powdery, but
yeah, like crumbly.
As it gets older, it gets hard, but goo. Like, also, the new emulsion also takes much longer. It takes at least 10 minutes, whereas the old ones, it would
like
almost
a couple
immediately.
Minutes, yeah. And you'd shake that bad boy.
Yeah, but it no longer has any interest in being sharp and accurate. Now, so I've been getting into it. So the black and white Polaroid film is actually sharper than the color one, but people like the color one because it feels like putting a filter on it, like on Instagram or something. Even the Polaroid itself, it seems to be evoking Instagram's iconography, although you could argue that Instagram is evoking Polaroid's iconography.
I mean, the Instagram icon looks like the front of the Polaroid camera.
Yeah.
Especially the old one.
Yeah.
Before it went minimal.
So Polaroid is... all right. So I just want... I'm like all of us.
Even... Sorry to stop you. Even Instagram posts...
Or like
with the white,
yes,
the caption,
absolutely. Yeah. So it's my obsession because, like many people, I'm getting more into analog and interested in analog, and I was just interested in taking pictures that would like be real things. You know what I mean? Yeah. I could really keep them, and they really exist in the real world.
Well, you could still you could print your pictures off your phone.
Yeah, you can, but. It's also, it's fun.
Yeah. It's
the instantness of it is fun. It's also like, they're not the best cameras. So you have very little control. You have, there's no control. At least the main, there's different Polaroids that cost more money, but the main Polaroid, right? The main Polaroid that you think of when you think of Polaroid.
Yeah.
They're fairly cheap. They have no way to adjust the focus. Uh-huh. So you have a focus that's about 5 feet in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be aware of that. You have no way of you have a very, very, very rudimentary control over exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Like not as like really you have three options of like overexposed, regular exposed, and underexposed.
Right.
As opposed to like other cameras, like you could actually like fuck with it. So it's like a dance. It's like a lotto. You know what I mean? Like, you point it, you take a picture, and some chemical reaction is going to happen that's going to make an image, and it might be good, it might be bad. And when it's good, it feels like luck. You're like, oh, this came out really good. And if it's bad, you're like, whatever, you throw it away. Or you keep it.
I'm too dumb to, like, actually know how a camera works.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only assume this is taking a piece of my spirit, yes?
Yes. Yes.
I was correct in this.
Yeah. In this instance, you are correct.
Yeah,
but that's why you just can't take too many photos. but so yeah, I mean, it's sort of like a new hobby for me and Jen. We both have them.
It's fun,
and we have trips coming up where we're going to take them around. And she wants to. We're going out later. She wants to bring our cameras with us. Not not to take a picture during a Broadway show, but like around.
It has a quality like a filter, but more than a filter, because a filter still reads as fake.
Yes.
Where like this, you look at it and you're like, that looks actually old.
Yes.
Like it makes it look old.
And this is genuinely the this is genuinely like what's happening between like the light at that very moment. It's like it makes you really think about film, like the disposability of digital film, you know, pictures is different. Mm-hmm. So it's starting to.
Wow, that does take a long time.
It does take a long time. And it tends to start bluer and then the blue burns off a little bit.
But yeah, I remember being really white at first.
Yeah. So it's different now. Yeah. But then there's also different films you can get. So it sort of is a kitsch product now, but it's fun. And, you know, I just want a hobby.
Yeah.
You know, just a fun hobby.
Fun.
What are you obsessed with?
It's a little thing. I'm really obsessed with the America 250 memes.
Okay.
And that's it. So
all right.
For posterity, we are about to, in a few short weeks, celebrate the, I don't even know what the word is. I can't pronounce it. There's a word for 250th.
Yeah.
America 250, as it's been called, July 4th, 2026.
250th and last year.
Yeah. Democracy. So Trump, everything out of the White House is just a fucking horror show, but especially their social media presence is so filled with AI slop, as we were talking about before.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's crazy.
They've become real, like, uncles on Facebook.
Yeah. White House.
the White House, yes.
Yeah.
The official White House account. Did you see the official Democrat account just said, shut up, you ugly fuck, to Stephen Miller?
I'm for it.
I'm for it, too. Fight fire with fire. Yeah. Stop pussyfooting.
Yeah.
They started it.
Yeah.
Sling mud.
Yeah.
So they released, the White House released, this is our government of these United States, released an image of like all these acts that were going to be performing in the America 250 concert. Where like, and a bunch of them have all dropped out, or, which I do believe, a lot of them were like, I was never even contacted about this.
Mm.
Why? Like Milli Vanilli. Are like, I've never
the
heard
of... The one survivor of 2-0.
Like, I don't know what this is. I never agreed to do this. Yes. Martina McBride was like, I thought I was doing something for July 4th, and then I found out it was from the Trump administration. I would never do that.
Right.
So, it's like a funny...
And so now they're all pulling out.
The funny image is of the original, like, ad with, like, all the X's over the faces as they drop out.
That's fun.
But the memes have been incredible.
Uh-huh.
And... It's all just like different fake things have now dropped out of the 250, America 250. And so I sent you the other day, there are funny ones. One was the farting noise you can make with your armpit has now dropped out of America 250. And then one I saw today that really fucking killed me is Marla Hooch will no longer be performing It's Gotta Be You at the Freedom 250 concert. And Marla Hooch from A League of Their Own.
Oh, incredible.
I'm singing for Nelson, ain't I, baby? It's just, they've been really, really fucking funny.
That's incredible.
Hold on, let me find some other ones, because I've been seeing them and sharing them. They've been giving me a giggle.
What? I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to really ask it not as a straw man question, but an actual question. Why do you think the other side's not funny?
Oh, wait, hold on, sorry. Jackie Jorm Jomp has pulled out of America 250. Jackie Jorm Jomp from 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Why? They think they're funny. They think we're not funny. So, like, that whole thing of, like, the right can't meme.
Yeah.
They say, like, the left can't meme. So.
But we can. And we do. Like, I feel like, I mean, their memes are all, like, I mean, maybe the answer is because they're more angry. I mean, we have more to be angry about, but we supplemented into...
That's the thing. You've got all three branches of government. You've got the Supreme Court. Why are you still so fucking mad?
Well, because that's what fuels the whole thing.
Of course, but it's just so... It's annoying. Like, you've got everything. Right. Shut up.
Right. You've won in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Right, well, that's the thing. They have to continue being mad.
Right.
And also, it's part of how they got people in the first place. People are mad because the conditions of their lives are bad.
Right.
So you lie and say that... Those conditions are because of whatever.
Woke.
Yeah, wokeness or foreign people and not the wealthy taking more than their fair share. So you have to keep stoking that anger. If you ever read, and I haven't read all of it, I'm not going to pretend like I have, but if you've read that, you know, the famous leftist rag, people's history of the United States. Yeah. I read the beginning of it, and I was fascinated to learn that, like, during the American Revolution, part of what was happening was the rich colonists were making life hard for people, and they scapegoated England,
the British, yeah,
and took some of that anger and pointed it towards them, and that's part of what did it.
Remember that one weird ass episode of The Sopranos?
Which one?
Where AJ starts reading A People's History of the United States. I think it's the Columbus episode.
I don't remember.
Which is such a fever dream of an episode. Written and directed by Michael Imperioli.
Okay.
Where they... It's like a whole thing about renaming Columbus Day.
Oh, I remember that.
And then, yeah, like, I think it's in that same episode, AJ, which, why wouldn't it be Meadow, is reading A People's History of the United States and is like, everything we've been taught is a lie. And then, I feel like
they didn't know what
to... parents are like, start like yelling, yeah, at him.
Yeah.
It was a weird... They didn't know what to do with AJ.
Right.
Ever.
I should say that I've watched all of The Sopranos, but in clips on Reels.
Okay.
I watched the entire series on Reels, not in episode form.
Great.
But yeah, I don't think they knew what to do with him. I mean, because they did a lot of things with him. He's goth. He's not. He wants to be violent and be in the mob, and then he doesn't. You know, he's like really like... You know, I guess he's lost, but there's not...
I think the most interesting things they ever did with AJ was when they... used him to, when they made him show parallel behavior to Tony.
Yes.
Like, remember when he had a panic attack and that, yeah, was a big thing?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, just the, listen, living under tyranny is hard, but the memes are great.
Yeah, the memes are really great.
The memes are really getting us by.
Yeah. I think, to answer my own question, I think we use humor differently. You know, like, we use humor to heal ourselves and to get by, whereas I think they use it as just one of many tools to hurt people with,
you know,
who are vulnerable.
I was just going to say, I really think the real stark difference between the two styles of humor are the classic punching up versus punching down.
Mm.
I think ours, yeah, punches up and theirs punches down.
Right, right.
And even, like, there's some punching down on the left where they'll, like, make fun of rural folks or uneducated folks, but that's not funny to me.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's really funny when it's punching up.
No, that's at not them. That's not funny stuff.
Yeah.
No. No. But 250, huh? It's not a long experiment. It's been a short little experiment.
Listen, I still have hope.
And I have hope.
I think it's I have hope, but I don't have hope the way that I did 10 years ago.
My hope is much more, you know, I want real huge change. I don't want to go back to, you know, I don't like Democrats almost as much as I don't like Republicans now. I want real huge top to bottom change. But so in some ways I do have hope.
Well, I have hope. I think it's just going to be fractured for a very long time.
Yeah.
I had hope. I think after 2016, I had hope that Trump was just going to be a blip. And then in 2020, when he lost so big, I was like, see?
Yeah.
He was just a blip. We can all relax. And then when he won again, this time around, and this term has been much more damaging than the first term.
Sure, yeah.
It's like, oh, this is going to have lasting effects.
The thing is, I don't think that... I think he is uniquely who he is, but I don't think he's an aberration. Like, I think the system we have was inevitably going to produce a Trump, so we have to change the system or we'll just keep producing them.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, I don't want to end on a dour note.
Let's just cut all this out.
We just end with 15 minutes of pure silence.
Didn't somebody try that? There was like the silence podcast.
I bet there was. I can't imagine anyone definitely listened to it shit.
Ironically, like hipsters are probably like, it's my favorite podcast.
Ugh. I don't know how to land this plane.
Let's just call it.
Well, happy Pride Month, everybody.
Yeah, it's Pride, baby.
Pride. Woo! Everyone have fun.
Did you ever see the, you know, do you follow Vinay?
No.
He was on Hacks this season. He was the guy at the convention who was like, you stopped doing your Deborah Does things, and now I just don't know how to do things anymore.
Who's that?
He's like a TikTok comedian, but he's...
Okay.
His name's Vinny. But he did the pigeon at Pride.
No.
Which is a favorite. It's an instant classic. I Love it. It gets reshared every year where it's a pigeon at a pride parade. Yeah. And it's like, ooh, yeah, baby, pride. And then he goes, throw some bread. And he's like, but seriously, throw some bread.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
It's really funny.
Remember in Animaniacs, the Good Feathers?
No.
It was a parody of Goodfellas, but they were pigeons. Who was that for?
I don't know. I don't know. A lot of children's programming in the 90s was not for children.
You look at like Animaniacs and shit, and it's like, you're making references that are so over our head. Like, I didn't know what the fuck Goodfellas. I didn't see Goodfellas as a baby.
You know what really makes me lose my mind? The mafia family in Zootopia.
The first one?
They're both.
Oh, the tigers or whatever?
No, they're like little...
Oh, the little mice! Yes!
Especially the one where she's got like the big hair.
Oh, that's great.
They're so funny.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that they're not guinea pigs because it was right there and it was the obvious way to go.
Yeah. You just reminded me of an in-joke that me and Jen have, which is we go see a vet and he's like, very nice kid. He's like 20-something, but we call him Boss Baby. Like, Pete, you going to see Boss Baby today?
Well, because he's just a young vet.
He just looks so young.
Oh, he's
he just looks
he
like 12.
That young though, if he went to veterinary.
I know. It's just we're old. But like Boss Baby. Boss Baby.
And that's a better joke than Doogie Howser, which was also right there.
No. It's a good in joke. The way good in jokes work is like it just came out of Jen's mouth one day. Yeah. We were calling him like Dr. Baby, Dr. Young, and then she was like, anyway, Boss Baby. And then that's such an insane movie that he's a baby in a fucking suit. Like, that movie's insane. That's crazy. Anyway, Boss Baby. This has been PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. We come out every single Wednesday about 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, you know, I think about you early commuters. I'm thinking about you.
That's who we do it for.
That's who we do it for. Anthony, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.